It was poking holes in cumulus nimbus during the first hour of the show. I think those who've been listening know that I have a son and a daughter-in-law in Ohio that are expecting our first granddaughter, and that we're closing on a home here so that we can enjoy the process of being grandparents. Well, today I flew into Ohio. I was planning on doing it after the show, but thunderstorms were in a vertical line all the way from the Gulf of Mexico up into Canada. And since it's a plane that's unfamiliar to me, it seemed the better part of discretion to fly out this morning, land safely, and then do the second hour from the airport FBO, which is where I'm sitting right now. My faithful companion, my English lab, is here with me, and we're broadcasting from airport FBO here in Ohio. It was fun, though, for me, just to listen, because I was able to listen to the last probably 25 minutes of the discussion on Noah and how Noah actually serves, the story of Noah, serves as a dress rehearsal for the covenant. Even as we were talking about the rainbow, one of the reasons the rainbow was a sign of the covenant is that the rainbow is light. It's sunlight then divided into its various components. So you have the full spectrum of light, light in every possible shade and hue, brilliant and beautiful. And when we are born into Yahweh's family and perfected and made immortal like light and like light perfected and then made more in Yahweh's image, which is like light, we become enriched and empowered on Shavuot. Those are the five benefits of the covenant. Immortality, perfection, adoption, enrichment, and empowerment. All of that comes by way of light. We get every possible shade and hue, the full spectrum of light. And collectively, this light then, in all of its beauty, in all of its glory, in all of its component parts, is really a perfect sign to tell us that the rains have done their business, we have been cleansed, and now that we are perfected and safe in Yahweh's Ark of the Covenant, that we're going to be enriched and empowered with the beauty of and full spectrum of His light. That was an interesting journey through a dress rehearsal, Kirk, that we didn't even know was a dress rehearsal.
Surprise to me. That we break down so easy, I mean, so perfectly.
Yeah, along with the presentation of each of the terms and conditions. And you had Noah in the first step having to decide that he and his family were going to walk away from the community of man, from all of the confusion that was so caustic to humankind, of the violence of human institutions. So the very first thing is that Noah and his family had to say, we're going to separate ourselves from the community of man and from human institutions.
And then we're going where God, where Yahweh is.
Yeah.
You can walk away into the desert
right.
And go away. So.
Right. Yeah, it's not just that we're walking away. We're walking away choosing rather than trusting human protection. You know, even back in the day, they would have had armies and police and militias. And you know, if you lived in the community of man, well, man was very violent. Within the community, they would try to protect you from other communities of man that would come in and rob and rape and plunder. And so it's to say, no, we're going to go on our own. We're going to leave you. We're no longer going to rely on any protections that you have to offer. In fact, you know, we're not even going to provide for any protection. We're going to trust and rely on Yahweh.
Totally.
Which is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the first two conditions of the covenant, to walk away from your country, from the human family, from Babel confusion, Babylon, religion and politics, militarism and the like. And the second is to
trust
and rely on Yahweh instead.
And they certainly did that.
Yeah. You know, it's it's a little bit of a leap here, but I'm sure you've been following the news regarding Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And how the Greeks overwhelmingly voted against what they called austerity, against what they called blackmail, against what they called was economic terrorism, and that somehow they were entitled to their pensions, they were entitled to their overzealous salaries for government work. They were entitled to their entitlement state, even though they couldn't pay for it, and that it was the responsibility of the others to pay for them. In other words, they became total and complete dependents, and thought they had a right to be a dependent on human institutions.
That's the odd thing to me. They absolutely believe that somebody is supposed to bail them out.
Right. That somebody is supposed to, somebody who has worked and earned a living, has paid their way, and now has a surplus, that those people are supposed to bail them out and turn over their money to the Greeks who are unwilling to work for it. And they feel like they're entitled to. I mean, it's a view of legalized stealing from their point of view. It's legal, moral, and appropriate for them to force others to pay for their indulgences. But the point I want to make is they have turned to their government, to human institutions upon which they're wholly and completely dependent. And you know, that by comparison to Yahweh's plan, which is that, you know, he has no interest whatsoever in us being, in fact, he's just the opposite. Don't be dependent on human institutions. And how, by the way, how's it turning out for the Greeks?
Well, I don't know. You can only go to the ATM and get $50. I mean, you're indeed due. I was suspicious.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you can live on that, but I couldn't.
No.
The rent check's going to be due eventually. I mean,
right. So it's not turning out well at all for the Greeks. As a matter of fact, even if they're afforded some form of indulgence in the short term, you know, if they're given some ability to con the people they've been besmirching into giving them more money, there's nothing in the Greek mindset that's going to resolve their problem. They're going to remain dependent, and therefore they're going to be right back in this predicament. So, depending on government hasn't worked out very well for them, has it?
Well, I don't think it's worked out for anybody. I mean, the guy who's the banks that loan them the money, they have a big debt, and now they can afford it, I guess, to write that off, but still,
mm-hmm.
they want to get their money back. That was the whole point of loaning money, is to pay and get it paid back with interest and make profit on it.
Yeah.
But they don't have any control. They didn't get any control out of this deal. So do you keep on pouring more good money after bad? I don't know.
Well, that is the mentality of central banks, is continuing to pour more bad money after bad, as opposed to a day of reckoning that shows the whole thing is a shell game. But that's the very thing that Yahweh said. Don't allow yourself to become dependent upon government. If you'll trust and rely on me instead, things will work out better. So here's a country, Greece, where, 90%+ of the citizens are part of the Greek Orthodox Church?
Mm-hmm.
And there's less than probably 1 in a million Greeks who know Yahweh and who are trusting and relying on him?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the plan. If you're not willing to do that, if Noah and his family said, you know, yeah, God, we'll trust you, but only so far. You know, we'll go ahead and we'll play a boat with you. But as for our protection service, we're gonna still be part of the human community. And for economics, we're still going to trade with them and buy their grain and be dependent upon them. They would never have sailed off with Yahweh.
Well, we wouldn't have that story, would we?
No. Oh, you have to not only disassociate from your country, from the institutions of man, from Babel, but you need to come to know Yahweh, come to understand what it is that he's offering and expecting, and to trust and rely on him and his plan. And then the next thing he said is, come to me and be perfect.
Right.
Well, in their case, their path to him was laid out exactly like the path that we have. The first step of the way was through the doorway of life, Passover. That's why that doorway was so pronounced in its depictions. You know, a doorway on the side of a ship.
Probably not a good place to put a hole, is it?
No. It worked out fine, didn't it?
It did.
Yep. So Yahweh created the doorway to life. He calls it Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even in Egypt, the first Passover, they were to smear some of the lamb's blood on the uprights and vertical of that doorway. You know, at the time, it was pretty scary outside there in Egypt, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to go outside in Egypt at the time to confront all that? I mean, this was the tenth of the ten plagues. I mean, the Egyptians wanted to kill him. Pharaoh wanted to kill him. The consequence of the plague was deadly. Do you think he'd want to go outside and that door? I mean, it's kind of like the Noah's Ark.
No, it's you get caught out there, they'll kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to be on the streets during a riot.
No, you want to be inside. You want to make sure that you've got the right markings on that door so that you're protected. And then, of course, matzah is all about cleansing. Cleansing in Hebrew throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is always conveyed by Mayim, the waters. And the waters came welled up from the sea. The waters came down from the sky. The waters came bursting forth from underground cisterns. You know, cleansing. And immediately upon them closing the door, they were cleansed. That's matzah. So we have Pesach with the doorway, matzah with cleansing, and now the family of Noah became the family of Yahweh, protected inside of the ark. He adopted them. He became responsible for them. We have the celebration of Bukurim.
Yeah. Once you have matzah, though, you can never get confused again about salvation, shalom, or reconciliation. I mean, once you get it, you can't be talking anything else.
Right. We're saved on matzah. We'll be back. So now that we have Noah and his family all protected inside of the ark that Yahweh designed for them, where he provided the instructions, all they had to do is engage on their behalf, really.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have seven sevens later. After the 40 days of 40 nights, of course, we send out the two doves, and finally one comes back with an olive branch, and the waters then begin to recede, and 49 days thereafter, we have the celebration of the promise of seven, of Shavuah.
Mm-hmm.
And they are enriched and empowered.
Empowered.
Yeah. To go forth now. And it's a lovely life that they live. It's the story of the covenant. And you know, with every last detail. And the thing that was actually the most important, I think, Kirk, is the realization that Yahweh presents the covenant to Noah exactly the same way that he does to Abraham. But with the case of Noah, it's more in your face. And that is that Yahweh didn't build the boat. You know, the Christian myth that salvation is a gift of God and not a result of works, so no one should boast in it, and that salvation is through faith in the gospel of grace. You don't do anything.
Yeah.
Well, not according to Yahweh. Noah was saved not because he didn't do anything. Noah wasn't saved by his faith. He wasn't saved by a gospel. He wasn't saved by grace. He and his family were absolutely saved. But the way they were saved is they listened to what Yahweh had to say and they acted upon it.
And they responded. All right.
And if you want to be part of the covenant, today we need to listen to what Yahweh had to say to the one person he presented the covenant to, Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to act on his instructions. So if we listen to what Yahweh said to Abraham regarding the covenant, just listen to what Yahweh said to Noah. and we act upon his instructions, which are the five conditions, we'll be saved too.
Even today, how could I carefully examine and continually consider Yahweh's word if I didn't do it myself? Of course, you have to do something. You have to participate.
Yeah. And you notice that in the presentation of Noah, there were clean animals and unclean animals. I mean, the animals were two by two to save the animals from that region. Yahweh loves life. He wanted to save life. He really loves life. But you notice there were clean animals in addition to the two by two. You know what they were for?
Well, is it food?
No, the clean animals. Mm-mm.
Oh, the clean animals?
Yeah.
Well, you got to reproduce. You got to start over.
Well, the clean animals, where he had more than the two by two, yes, there was some that were for food, but
for the most part, sacrifice.
Yeah, they're to celebrate the Moed Mikre. Right. He is going to be celebrating the various days that are being chronicled here, Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavua. He is going to be celebrating those days with his family, and so they're part of the symbolism of those days.
Mm.
That's the reason why they had these clean animals. But all the way through, you've got to be willing to listen to Yahweh and act upon it. Now, is there any place where Noah says, "Oh my God, I'm saved. I'm saved at last," where he just says, "You know, God, you saved a wretch like me." Is there any place where we hear this, him and he and his family just, you know, waxing poetic about salvation?
No, he's very trusting. He's more like, "You've taken care of me. You're my friend. You're my father."
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they had a relationship, and they were celebrating that relationship. They were enjoying Yahweh's not only protection, but Yahweh's guidance. And as such, salvation was a minor factor along the way. Yeah, I understand that salvation is important, but they were celebrating an extension of life. They were celebrating a restoration of their relationship, but they weren't doing the Christian thing. "Are you saved?"
No.
Did Noah once have to ask his sons, "Are you saved?"
No, not once.
Not once. Yeah, it was.
Oh,
package of benefits includes salvation. I mean, the first benefit of the covenant is eternal life. The second is perfection, salvation, if you will. The third is adoption, so that you inherit everything that he has to offer. And then enrichment and empowerment.
Power.
Yeah.
I certainly got that.
They were celebrating those things. They weren't wallowing in their praise, thanking God for saving. In fact, I'm not even sure that they thank God.
No.
Right. No, not in that sense. The opposite of the covenant relationship would be institutionalized religion. So if the covenant, which is walking away from human institutions to have a relationship with God, if you were to go the opposite direction, you would have you'd be part of a religious institution, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the largest religious institution on the planet today?
Well, Christianity and Catholic, and as a subset of that.
Yeah. The religion of Christianity is the largest religion. 2.5 to 3 billion Christians on the planet today. The largest subset of that, and the largest religion on the planet, would be Roman Catholicism, with 1.2 billion faithful. Followed by the various forms of Orthodox or Eastern Christianity, which is really the original Roman religion. You know, that the religion of called the Roman Catholic Church. Rome, at the time that it was established as the Empire of Rome, the city of Rome no longer existed, and so the Rome was the Eastern Roman Empire, Constantinople, and as such, you're really dealing with the same institution. It's just that with Roman Catholicism, they've held a large group of people together, while the Eastern Orthodox, now has broken into a lot of subsets. So the largest portion of Christianity is Roman Catholicism, followed by the Eastern Orthodox Christianity. And just yesterday, the Pope drew a crowd very close to 1 million.
Amazing.
In a little country. Amazing. You know, there's 1 million people who have the time and the means to go and get a glimpse of and listen to the Pope, who don't have the time, evidently, or the inclination to read the Torah and get a glimpse of Yahweh and listen to him. No. Why would you do that?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story. I have one of my students, when she was a young girl, she studied one of those lines to kiss his ring or whatever as they're walking, as he comes by, and she stood there forever, and she watched all the hullabaloo, and finally he's a few yards from her, and she says, "This is the stupidest thing I've ever done. Why am I doing this?" And she walked away.
Wow.
Came home and told her mother, "I'm not going to be a Catholic anymore."
Yeah. Yeah, oh, I know. Kissing a man's ring. What did Yosha say about calling people father?
Father, he said, "I'm your father."
Yeah, don't do it, right?
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it. So, what is the Pope called? Isn't Pope Latin for father?
Papa.
Yeah, it's Latin for father. He is the Holy Father. The Pope title means father. So, isn't he in direct contradiction to what Yahweh said and Yosha said we ought not do?
On so many things.
Yeah. And Augustus, Caesar Augustus, Octavian?
He was the first Papa, yeah.
Yeah, he was the first Pope, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
And that Julius Caesar was a Pope, is a Caesar. I don't think he actually lived long enough to take the title Pope. But Octavian, Augustus sure as heck did. Even Caligula, Nero.
Just passed it on.
Yeah, they were popes. And so he's using the same title that was used by the Roman Caesars.
Mm-hmm.
Men who pretended that they were God, who dressed up like a God, who had statues made to them like they were God. Yeah, who said that, you know, they spoke for God. What's the difference in this Pope? Does he use the same title from the same city?
Charlie's
with the same claims?
Oh, yeah, same rhetoric.
And does not one Roman Catholic ever bother to read what Yahweh had to say about Rome?
Well, you just got to have faith, my friend. Don't you understand?
Yeah, but Yahweh said that Rome was the most vile of all beasts.
Yeah.
And the most vicious of all beasts. And that ultimately Rome would trample the whole world down.
And it has.
And, you know, the Empire of Rome didn't do that. The Empire of Rome trampled down much of Europe, but not all of Europe.
No.
And really didn't get outside of Europe, you know, a little bit in northern Africa. You know, Carthage isn't in Europe, and they certainly pummeled the Carthaginians. And, you know, they went into the Promised Land. Israel is not in Europe, and they pummeled them not once but twice. But they really never laid claim to most of Turkey. They constantly, what is today Turkey, they were constantly battling with the Persians, and that was essentially a draw. And the Germanic territories, the best they could do was a draw. They got into the Balkans and for a while I had held sway, but didn't get much past the Balkans, and controlled Spain, but didn't get past it. And so went as far as Britain. It was hit and miss. So did the Empire of Rome ever tread down the whole world?
No, Yahweh was talking about the Pope, and he's talking about the church.
Yeah, the Empire of Rome was never in South America, was it?
No, it certainly didn't have the power to divide it up and give it to two, half and half, to two different countries.
But the Pope, he's his institution, the Roman Catholic Church, is the most powerful institution in South and Central America. That's a place that Rome never tread.
I know. It's got some pretty
and the Roman Catholic Church is, got an audience with Congress. It's, it's among, if not the largest religious denomination in America. So Rome wasn't there either, were they?
No, they're powerful. You name
it. Rome didn't get into Asia, not the Asia that we would consider the Far East. But the Roman Catholic Church is sure there.
Yeah.
Roman Catholic Church is in Australia and New Zealand, but in the South Pacific, but Rome never was.
Walk around any major city, just about, Pearl, and you'll find out.
Rome never made it much further south than the northern part of the African coast, but the Roman Catholic Church goes all the way to Cape Town.
Yep, from tip to tip.
Right. So when Daniel's talking about the most vicious of all beasts that's going to tread the whole world, and that while this beast, this vicious beast that treads the whole world, will endure right to the end. There is no other institution out of Rome that took all of the Roman vestiges of power. The papal name, the location of its power, and even right down to the smallest details, the Roman Catholic Church is an outgrowth of the institution of Rome. As a matter of fact, Theodosius, who reigned about 400 CE, about 75 years after Constantine, he is the one that made Christianity and the Roman Catholic Church synonymous with the Empire of Rome. There was no distinction between them anymore.
Yeah. I was just thinking, what's the most famous building in Moscow?
The Kremlin.
Well, in the Kremlin, what's the most famous in there is that church building, which is the...
Right.
Which is
St. Isaac's, isn't that what it is?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everywhere you go. I mean, this is but their philosophy is more powerful than their land.
Oh, yeah. In fact, every building in the Kremlin, in fact, I think actually St. Isaac's is just, I've been there. It's in Red Square, but it's outside of the Kremlin. The Kremlin is, behind the wall. Mm-hmm. And you've got the tomb to Lenin right there. But outside of the Kremlin is St. Isaac's. And it is the Roman Orthodox Church, which is an outgrowth of the Eastern Orthodox Church, which was the Church of Rome.
But Roman nonetheless. If you don't understand the Eastern and Western Empire, though, then you won't understand the Torahist one coming from Alexander's place in the Roman Empire. That's why the preachers always put him somewhere in Europe when he's really, Europe, yes, but, Western.
Yeah, Macedonia is where he's going to come from, because it is an intersection between Alexander the Great and the Greek Macedonian Empire that he conquered, and the Roman Empire, and the intersection between those two is Macedonia.
So if you can figure that part out, why can't you figure out that the church is who he's talking about?
There is no question that the beast that is Rome is that this whore of Babylon today is the Roman Catholic Church. Almost every aspect of Roman Catholicism is predicated on the Babylonian religion. From its sun god worship and its halos and its Trinity and its Christmas and its Easter and its Sunday veneration, its cardinals, its nuns. I mean, that's all part of the Babylonian religion. It's holy water, it's mass, all Babylonian.
The Mass of Kings and the round circle.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that are Eucharist cakes, because of course they don't do matzah. Circles in the shape of the sun. Everything. If you look at even the Roman Catholic crosses, a cross which is a pagan symbol, and they all have little sunbursts around them. There's sunbursts and halos everywhere. It's an outgrowth of the Roman worship of the sun, the inconquerable sun, and Mithraism, which were blended together, along with the Greek worship of Zeus and Dionysus. It's a blend. And it's that's what's at play in the last days. That's why it's so interesting to see how Pauline Christianity was based upon the Gnosticism of the Greeks and how his Jesus quotes Dionysus. And
right.
And almost every aspect of Pauline Christianity is based upon the Greek philosophy and religion. That's, you know, that's that whole idea, the spirit is good, the flesh is bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's Greek Gnosticism.
Yeah.
But you don't find it. Yahweh never speaks of the flesh as being bad. Ever.
Yeah.
He thinks it's good. He created it. He really likes it.
Yeah.
And so that whole spirit is good, flesh is bad, the Torah is of the flesh, which is Pauline Christianity, that's all part of Greek Gnosticism and wholly separated from God. It's amazing. It's just so sad. It must really, really trouble God to see almost a million people venerate this wicked man known as the Pope. Welcome back to the last segment of Shattering Myths for today. And Kirk, if I'm bothered by the fact that so many people flock to churches and that this Pope is taking his tour through Latin America and there will be at times a million people that will be looking up to him as if he were God's representative, it's just such a tragedy. Because it is, I mean, just a statement of fact. There have been exactly zero Roman Catholics saved. And if you just want to use the Christian vernacular, there's not been a single Roman Catholic in the past 2,000 years who has been saved. Not one.
Can I say a quick thing about Noah that's pertinent to that?
Sure.
In the ninth verse, of the ninth chapter, God says that he establishes his covenant with you and your seed. Now, he's talking to Noah and his sons. It's the same covenant. It's always the same covenant. It's the same approach. And if you want to extrapolate a little bit from that, remember Japheth, the son, and Ham, they become Asia and Africa and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So he's offered this to the whole world when he offers it to Noah's children. Because that's the whole world, so it's not like it's restricted to just Abraham's children. You know,
so what you're dealing with here is just another more tangible expression of the benefits of the covenant with Abraham. You know, it's your seed and your seed, you know, your children and your seed after them for all generations. But in here, he's just saying, you know, your children are becoming the world.
Yeah. He's talking, you know, very specifically, the deal was always offered to the whole world and the whole world rejects it. So it's not like Paul saying, you know, this was a Jewish thing or something. This was the covenant was always offered. He didn't offer a different one. And he offered it right here. Here's the covenant to Noah.
Right. And by the way, you know, the way as we've gone through this covenant, and Yahweh calls it a covenant. You've just read the statement.
Yeah.
As Yahweh goes through the covenant with Abraham, does he say, you know, this is a different covenant than I offered to Noah?
No.
No. Is it? Is the covenant with Abraham the New Testament?
Nope.
No.
Covenant is
the same exact covenant.
Yosho.
You know, and so he's telling you that the Noah story is a tangible expression of the process of being part of his family, the process and the benefit.
It don't change the words. Even the English authors didn't change the word.
Yes. It is pretty amazing that he not only emphasizes that this is the covenant that I'm establishing with you, your family, and your seed after you, which is the same terminology he uses with Abraham, but tangibly the sons represent the various peoples around the world.
Yeah. We know where we can trace them. We know where they went.
Right.
We know where Japheth went, you know, Asia, Europe, Asia, and Africa.
Right.
It's not a secret. There's nothing hidden here. Just one other cute thing. You'll appreciate this. On the third chapter, it says, every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. That's for your food.
The reason that we think that's funny is that when Yahweh created the opportunity for us to eat anything we wanted. Yahweh said specifically that so long as you're thoughtful about it, you can eat anything you want. When Yahweh said that, which he needed to say, so that a religion which was born out of its kosher food laws wouldn't hoodwink people. So Yahweh has this exemption. You can eat whatever you want. It is interesting that it's not the first time that he gave that exemption. He gave that exemption to Noah.
Yeah, I know. Right.
So, and that, by the way, when I explain to people that an exemption isn't a change, there are times when the rule applies because the rule is really important for the health of his children. And there's times when he offered the exemption. That when I said that this was an exemption, translated the passages and spoke about why the exemption was so important and how Yahusha himself affirms the exemption. Boy, did I have people that came out with their daggers. It wasn't the core of the covenant with our family, but some people did come out with their daggers, and so it is nice to find another affirmation of the exemption. Yeah. So long as you're thoughtful about it.
Right.
Eat whatever you want. God's not into establishing rules. There are terms and conditions of the covenant, but they set us free. They are for our benefit. And so Yahweh is teaching and guiding us with all of the examples throughout his Torah. May Yah bless.